Okay, once again, good morning everyone, and thank you for having me and me being able to share God's message with you. For some of you, I know from the camp, some of you I'm seeing for the first time, and for those that never met me before, if you're wondering who is this guy who parachuted from the moon here, I'm just a man who loves Jesus. I'm one of the preachers at the English church in Grimsby, Church of Christ. And now and then I help with the Polish congregation in Hamilton and share the message in Polish, which is tough, but I'm getting there. And I'm actually starting to enjoy it more preaching in Polish than I do to teach in English. Let us pray. Dear God, take our eyes and help us to see things that you want us to see through them in your way. Father, take our ears and help us to listen today to the message and retain what you want for us to receive and be able to pass it on for those who we meet that need your word. Father, take our minds and brighten them that we may understand things that are coming to us the way you want us to understand them. Finally, dear Father, beloved Christ and our wonderful Spirit, take our hearts and make them a place for your Spirit. We ask you and thank you in Christ's name. Amen. Today I would like to consider a question that I've came across quite a bit in my life. And that is, why do bad things happen to good people? I've been told by many of my friends that whenever they try to share the Word of God, they get hit with, well, if God is so good, why is there so much evil in this world? If God is so powerful, why doesn't he just do away with the sickness and pain and all these atrocities? I probably won't give you all the answers that you're seeking for, but I will like to consider this and just show what I found in the Bible regarding this question. Why do bad things happen to good people? My dad, he's gone now. He's with the Lord. He tried to be a good person. He really did. He preached at this congregation quite a bit ago, 12 years ago, not at this church, the other ones that you've had in the past. And he searched for God most of his life. Bad things were happening to him. Then he found, he always was searching for God. And eventually he did found a close relationship with him through one of our friends that brought him the message of evangelism, the Evangelion, the good news. And he believed. He finally was so happy to meet the Father and Christ and fell in love with him. My dad gave his life, as much resources as he could, finished school. And I would like to say that great things happen and he lived ever happily ever after, but he didn't. He came down with cancer and it shredded his body apart, and he had all these horrible things happen to him, disfigured and in pain. Bad things happened to my dad. He wasn't perfect. I think of my dad as a good person. But bad things did happen to him. And I remember sitting by his bed at the last days that he had, and he didn't mince words. He asked himself, why? Like, I did what I could. I finished Bible school. I can now preach. I can now evangelize. And I have told as many friends as I could, whether they liked it or not. I told them about Jesus. Why am I running out of time? Why did these bad things happen to me? And we talked, and we brought Christ into it, and we had a good time. But it was hard to difficult for me to comfort him. I actually felt comfort in him. He comforted me when he said that I wish I could have loved more. And the last words that he had was, I wish for you, everyone that I see before me, now that you would love more. He did not speak of the anguish and the pain that he was enduring. They say that in the hospitals, people meet their last days, and the nurses say that it could be tough. But they also say that the Christians, they die the most beautifully because they're always at peace. They're always so... It's like they know what's coming, and they are not afraid of it, even if they are suffering. When bad things happen to bad people, we almost get a good feeling, if I'm honest. In the Bible, I read about Ahab, horrible, horrible king, who finally had his coming. And then when I found out that he got shot by an arrow that flew that nobody knew, I thought to myself, yes. But then I repented. Then I found out his wife, a snake that would coil next to him and whisper lies into his ears, would then fall out of the window, smash against the floor, and the dogs. Anyways, and I said, yes, because of the horrible things they did. So, if we're honest, sometimes when bad things happen to bad people, I kind of smile. Remember Herod, the man who insisted that the children of under age of 2 to be killed because he wanted to kill the Messiah that could possibly come. He didn't know where he was or who he was, so he figured any child under 2, kill it. But then when I found out that he fell over and his insides fell out and he died, I also smiled. So if we're honest, when these things come around and people deserve it, it's, well, you can answer how you feel about that unto yourself. When good things happen to bad people, well, I like to just say, I guess they got lucky, although I don't believe in luck. And when good things happen to good people, like in Disney cartoons, the happy ending, living happy ever after, well, I guess that's nice. But when bad things happen to good people, or perhaps me, then I say to myself, come on, there had to be a mistake. Bad things should not happen to good people. But we know the reality of it, and we know that it happens. If we are looking for a short sermon, a short message today, then you're in luck. Because if we go to the passage found in John 9 at the beginning, and Jesus heals a man born blind. And this question, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, here's one hint. As we read, starting at 9, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, they asked Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Who screwed up? Whose fault is it that this man now endures bad things? And Jesus answered them, it was not that this man sinned, oh no, or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. So that's one reason. It's a good one. And if you're in a rush, then you can write that down and go home. That bad things sometimes happen to good people because that the good works of God might be displayed in those people. Secondly, if you also want a quick answer, you can add to that. Secondly, this is quoted by Paul the Apostle, the Christian assassin who used to be Saul, but now he changed his name to Paul. And he quoted from Psalms 13. And the message is written in Romans 3, starting at 10. He said, none is righteous, no, not one. Not one understands. No one seeks for God. All have turned aside together. They have become worthless. No one wants God. Not even one. Well, therefore, if there is no righteous person, which translates to a good person, then bad things can't happen to good people. How can they? There's just no good people. Only bad things, according to Paul, happen to bad people, because everyone is not righteous, not even one. Therefore, if there is no righteous people, then bad things can't happen to them. Are we all in the agreement then? Those two are good reasons. They're fair. We can just land the plane here and call it it. Or perhaps this is not as simple as it seems at first glance. In fact, mankind is so hopeless that God had to die for them. We children of God were purchased, backed with his life. And we know that we are worthless without him, without Jesus. The world, on the other hand, they don't see it the way we do. The world sees worth in themselves, and they reject God, and they reject his love. And the world rejects people they believe because they believe they're good enough. If they're good enough, why need for betterment? Why need to help me to be better if I'm good enough already? So the world has a difficulty seeing need for God, need for someone that can help them to be better because they're already good. The world believes that mankind overall, we are good. And on many occasions, it was said that if we only educate ourselves, we can overcome our bad nature and become the Übermensch, as Hitler once said, become the number one race if we only educate ourselves. The difficulty with that is, as one preacher mentioned, is that if we only go and educate bad people, for example, a person who steals spikes, rail spikes from the train tracks, if we try to fix him and we try to educate it, it's most likely that in the future that he will steal the train and the tracks themselves. That's not the answer. Educating bad people does not make them good. So when something undesirable happens to an individual in general, mankind tends to ask, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, even if I'm honest, I also have done that in myself, and I also have done that. As a preacher, you would say, well, you should have known better. You did a preaching on it. But let me paint you a picture. When a minivan, a family wipes out on the highway, and they're killed by a drunk driver, how do you feel about that? When children found out that they have cancer at their young age, doesn't that make you angry? Makes me angry. I know better, but it still makes me angry. It's not fair. When young families keep on losing newborns due to complication, I tend to think, why do bad things happen to good people? If that question crosses your heart, your mind, there's nothing wrong with you. It just means you care. And the closer you are to God, the more you feel. Remember kids that were tiny and young, how receptive they were, and how when they witnessed something bad, how they experienced it and they jumped, or they were like, but it's time as they experience things that has worn off. Their innocence has gone away. They become more resistant to things that are ugly, things that are horrible. It almost became okay. Now, when we are born again, we are like a child inside. We start to renew ourselves. And Jesus paid the greatest compliment when he was asked, how do you enter a kingdom of heaven? And he didn't pick the lawyer or a king or a dignitary. He chose a little child and says, if you are like this child, does he mean that we have to be stupid and ignorant? No, he refers to the innocence of this child. And when we do become Christians, we are starting to be renewed. Our hearts are becoming hearts of flesh. They go from stone to flesh. Once again, we start to feel. So when you do hear that bad things happen to people, Don't feel bad that you feel bad. It just means you're alive. You're feeling again, and you're becoming like a child in your heart. And Christ, he likes that. He warms up to that, and he said, unless you are like this child, you can't even enter, you can't even begin your journey to heaven. In order to gain some insight into the question, I found that the story in the Old Testament of Hezekiah to be very, very helpful. The story of Hezekiah may be found in 2 Chronicles, starting at 29. Hezekiah began to reign when he was 25 old, and he reigned 29 years, a lot longer than his predecessors. His father, grandfather, and a grandfather only managed to reign for 15, 16 years, and because they were not doing God's will, God cut their time short. And Hezekiah himself, as you find out in a minute, almost ended up at also 15 years of reign only. But because he was humbled and he came before God and he asked God for help, as you will see, God changed his mind and let him live longer. His mother, Hezekiah's mother's was named Abijah, the daughter of Zechariah, and he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord according to all that David his father has done. Now that is rare. There were many kings after David, many kings. But to say that he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, that is rare to say about kings. And yet here we see that this man was considered to be quite good. At least that's what people wrote about him. Hezekiah, when he was young, he came into power. He corrected things that his grandfather and his father and grandfather, who at one point sacrificed his brothers and his young brothers, they would sacrifice him. He would be one of the only ones that would survive to get what they want, to bend the universe, to sacrifice to the idols that have no ears, no eyes. So when he came to power, he decided he was going to do something different. He's going to undo what his grandparents, grand-grandparents on his father did, which was to stray from God. Hezekiah cleansed the temple. That was new. Hezekiah restored the temple worship. He started again Passover celebration. Hezekiah organized the priest. He did a lot of beautiful things. And for that, it says that he did what was good in the eyes of the Lord. So what we have here is a good person. Now, let's look for the reason why bad things would happen to him, and then hopefully we'll get some answers from this example. Why do bad things happen to good people? At one point in time, Hezekiah, while doing all these things, God wanted to test him. And he sends the army of Assyrians to come at his doorsteps. And this general of Assyria, his name was Sennacherib, was so cruel or so mean that he surrounded the city, and then he would, not just before the attack, he would just yell at the crowds, and he'd get people to translate it and yell at them saying, "Give up. All the other gods that came before people that we invaded before never helped them. Why should it be different with yours? Give up this God of Hezekiah and just let us in." This blasphemous person was so sure of himself that he kept yelling and yelling and yelling, trying to discourage the people of Hezekiah's castle. Hezekiah, on the other hand, didn't waste time. He and the prophet Isaiah prayed to God, and God answered. God sent his angels to destroy the leaders and turn the whole army that was way, way bigger than Hezekiah's. He routed them. He sent them packing home. And when this horrible leader, Sennacherib, came with a tail between his leg back to his house, and his own family members turned and killed him. That's what came out of trying to kill God's chosen. And when Hezekiah was in trouble, he prayed and God answered and he saved. Because he saved that event, what happened afterwards, there was loot. There was so much wealth that these guys brought with them that was left behind, that he packed it all and he stored it. And now Hezekiah has kind of felt, you know what, I did that. People and emissaries from other countries decided to come over, and because they knew what happened. Something that should not have happened. They saw how this Assyrian king went from kingdom to kingdom to kingdom, destroyed, took what he wanted, and made fun of their gods. But he broke his teeth at this kingdom of this Jehovah, of this Hezekiah, who would pray and he would stop this flood. So emissaries from all over the world, they would send gifts, and Hezekiah would still grow in wealth. Gold, diamonds, whatever not, he became a very rich, very known person. At one point in time, God saw what was happening, and he was worried. So God sent the messenger, a prophet, to Hezekiah to warn him, listen, you can't keep going the way you're going. I know you were good, but your life is going to be so many more years and you're done. And he became sick. But he didn't waste time. I kind of like how he takes this initiative of his grand-grandfather David. He goes to God and he prays and says, I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me. And I guess he was genuine, because God sends the same messenger again and tells him, I heard your prayer. I heard your outcry. And I know in your heart you do feel sorry. I will give you another 15 years. That's why he didn't only live and reign for 15 years, but instead he lived and reigned 30 years. But I wish this is the end, and I wish this is where the good news ends. However, when Hezekiah heard that he will be healed, instead of accepting it and being thankful, he looks at the prophet and says, all right, if I'm going to be healed, what kind of a sign am I going to get that I'm going to be healed? You would figure the fact that you're healed will be a good enough sign that you're healed. But this guy wants evidence. He wants proof that when this healing takes place, it's going to be spectacular. God says, fine. What do you want? How about I show you my control over the sun itself? He says, what do you want? You want your shadow to go forward? We all know what happens when time goes by. Our shadow goes forward, doesn't it? It's everything we experience. Everyone has experienced that. The shadow gets longer. Hezekiah says, well, everyone knows that's what happens. How about you do it backwards, dear God? Make the shadow go backwards. He's asking God to make the sun itself go against nature itself and go backwards. God said, fine. I will make, as a sign for you, the sun itself to go backwards. Or the rotation of the earth itself to stop and start going the opposite direction. Have we even an ink of idea what catastrophic event this could have been? This is the end of the world. If the world stops, it's bad. If the world starts turning backwards, nevertheless, God has caused the shadow of a man to go backwards for a duration of time during the day. And as a sign, the sign came, and the king gets healed. I wish I could stop here and tell you that was it. Just because he asked for this to be so phenomenal and so broad around the world, he didn't even know that he was signing his own demise, because he didn't just notice, his people didn't just notice, a kingdom of Babylon, a massive empire, compared to United States, probably 10 times what it is now, they've noticed. And they've noticed that on that day, a man was healed. And they didn't waste time. They send representatives, ambassadors, to that King Hezekiah to know what exactly happened. Hezekiah sees these ambassadors. He knows where they're from. They're from Babylon. And you know what? I think it's good if we kiss up to this nation, because these guys, they own. So he brings them in, and Hezekiah is now in a position to evangelize. Hezekiah is now in a position to tell the mightiest nation of the world that it was God who did that. That it was God who saved them. That it was God that caused the sun to go backwards. But he didn't. Instead, he welcomed these ambassadors, brought them into back, and he showed them all his wealth as if to trying to impress them. The prophet comes to him one more time, says, "What have you done? What did you show them?" And Hezekiah says, "What haven't I showed them? I showed them all." And the prophet says, "You fool. You had your chance to tell the whole world about the God that you love, the one that takes care of you." Do you know why bad things happened to Hezekiah? I haven't told you yet. Because the prophet continues and says, "From now on, nothing will happen to you. Not until your generations to come of children that aren't born yet, they will be captured. They will be made into eunuchs." We all know what that means. I'm not going to break the ears of the kids. "They will be bound, they will be taken away by the Babylon, by the nation that you could have told about God. Your next generation will suffer because of you." You want to know why people suffer in the future generations for no reason? And this really hurt me when I read. Then Hezekiah, hearing these, instead of being crushed and moved, he answers the prophet, "Well, the word that you told me of the Lord is good." Because he thought, "Why not? If there will be peace and security in my days, wow, how can I lose?" He didn't care about his children, his grandchildren, and those to come. They will be born, they will suffer, they will be captured, they will be mutilated. They won't even know why. Because at one point in time, when a man had a chance to tell people about the world, about God, he chose to put the focus on himself. And because of that, bad things will happen to good or okay people in his family to come. If you ever had a chance to lick the Bible, pages of it, you will find David in the same boat because of his actions, Bathsheba and all these others, incest in his family. God said, "The sword, dear beloved David, will never leave your house because of the things that you have done." But unlike Hezekiah, David was remorseful. And the Bible doesn't mince words when it names him a man after God's heart. Because Hezekiah didn't care, but David did. But this would explain a little bit why future generation, kids that have done nothing, people that have done nothing, will endure suffering because of something that has happened in the past. I wish I had more time. I'm at page 3 out of 5. Beloved brothers and sisters, after this, I wanted to go, and for those that will stay for the Polish version of it, I'll take my extra time. I'll do the extra half hour, and I'll pour it out all of it. The next passage I would use would be of Job. Remember Job? Remember suffering of Job? And if Job had to make himself a resume, not that he ever needed one, this is what Job's resume would sound like. There was a man in the land of Oz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. So this man was the greatest of all people in the East. His sons used to go and hold out parties, and he would invite the families, and they would have a great time. But his children, he wasn't sure about them. And it says that he would constantly pray for his children. Why? Well, he said, it may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Does Job, that's why Job continually prayed for his children. This man wasn't just amazing. He wasn't just a really good egg. He went out of his way to pray for even those that might have, just in case they sinned. He even prays for his kids. The devil comes to God one day, I don't know how he got there, and says, well, this Job guy, I don't know about him. You're so proud of him. God said, well, he is a good man, and I will prove it. Or if you really want to find out, I'm giving you access to everything. Satan, the devil, was allowed to test Job. Satan takes Job's property. He even took his children. Satan attacks Job's health. His wife turns against Job and says, why don't you just curse God and die? Job's three friends that were supposed to be his friends, one of them says, Job, don't you fear God? In other words, he's thinking that Job is making fun of God. Another, Bildad, says, God punishes only the wicked. So guess what, Job? I guess you're wicked. Zophar, his last friend, said, you know what, Job? I think you deserve it even worse. So those were his friends that came to console him. Well, it might seem that there is nothing left of Job, and that God had turned his back on Job. If it wasn't for one small detail, God always kept Job's soul safe. That was the deal. Take anything you want, devil. Do whatever you want. You don't touch the soul. Well, what is a soul? Why is it so important? Because at the beginning, in the garden, at the beginning of time, God stood on the earth and he looked at the earth. He picked up the earth. That's what we are. We are earth. That's what we're made of, this body. He breathed into it, essence of life, his spirit. So if you were to reverse that, what do you got? The essence of life from God and dirt. And now, at that time, something miraculous happened because a soul was created. So when we now perish, when we now die, the earth takes our body, our spirit. It says in the Bible, if God's spirit would come back to him now, all the life from the earth would end. So when the spirit of God that keeps us alive goes back to him, something is left. And that is your soul. And God did not allow Job to suffer any damage to his soul. God protected that. And God protects us. There may be many things that happen to us, many burdens, many pains that come upon us. But brothers and sisters, know that God is faithful to you. And when he says that no one will take me out of my hand, as Jesus has said, what he means is that your soul, it will be safe until the day you meet him, until the day we come before God. And what's going to happen then? Is your mind, your brain, your heart going to testify to what you have done? No. But it says that every single word that we have uttered will be recalled, because that's in your soul. what we are is our soul, our experiences. It's all in there. Imagine that any of us right now would lose their memory. What is there left of you? Nothing. Our soul contains all our experiences. And God, dear brothers and sisters, goes out of his ways to protect that. Job at one time said this, "Oh, that my words were written." If somebody could write this down. "Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Oh, that with an iron pen or a lead, they were engraved in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives." He didn't know about Jesus. Who was he talking about? I was talking about Christ. How did he know? Which brings us to my last person that I wanted to share with you. And I have the least time for him, which is Jesus. It's our beloved Christ is the last person. Because out of all these people, the only person who could say and ask, "Why are these bad things happen to me?" Because he was good. He was the only being on this earth who ever walked who was good. And the horrible things that were happening to him, that did happen, he was the only one who had the right to ask, "Why did these bad things happen to me?" You see, Jesus could have called 4,000 angels when he stood before Pilate. Pilate was accusing, he was trying to talk to him, he's trying to show how authoritative, how big he is. Jesus says, "You have no idea who stands before you. You have no idea what you are doing. You have no idea who I am, and you don't know what I can do. Because if I wanted to, I could call down 4,000 of angels now to take care of this, and I wouldn't have to think about it again." But he didn't. And when we know what happened next is that he opened his hands and he allowed him to nail him to the cross, and the loveliest body, loveliest human being that ever existed was smashed against the tree, and his blood was poured out for me and you. All that so that we may know him. So that we may know God. And that one day, when our time ends, for some it's going to be quicker, for others it's going to be longer. Some of us will unfortunately experience more pain than others. Know that he always keeps your soul free. Know that the man who didn't deserve to experience pain has. And he didn't even complain and say no. So that me and you and those who fall in love with him, although we are bad, may stand before God, live in eternity, and enjoy good things that will then happen to us, good people. Amen.